Following was recorded in someone's basement. Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show, The Pro Show! With your hosts, Kyle Joseph and Mark Cote. Take it away, guys!
Hey everyone, I'm Kyle.
And my name's Mark.
And you're listening to the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show.
The Puo Show.
The Puo Show.
I did it this week.
Wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yes. We're still on Spotify?
As far as I know, considering that Anchor is owned by Spotify.
That's right. I forgot. I remember that. Hopefully they don't take out our ability to post this podcast.
I think we'll be okay.
Hopefully.
So we want to thank you again for joining. On this week's episode, we are going to talk TakeOver. War Games Trace, number three.
A couple of first evers in this one.
Yeah, and we have also Survivor Series,
yep.
2019. A couple, you know, other random thoughts for the week, and then we'll close out with the preview of C4's anniversary show, Combat Shock.
Combat Shock. That's tomorrow.
That is tomorrow. Tomorrow being the 29th of November. There are still tickets available, but they're running out.
So make sure to grab yours very, very soon, very quick.
Run now.
Right. So after the break, we'll be back to talk TakeOver.
War Games.
Thanks so much for holding.
It was just only a matter of seconds.
That's correct.
I love how we do this. That's great.
All right.
Yeah, no, it's... So, yeah, this past weekend was a big wrestling weekend. So, yeah, I think this week, like we kind of said at the beginning, let's just kind of break down War Games, Survivor Series, and then next week, let's kind of touch base on this week and next week Raw, as well as SmackDown.
Yep.
You know, of course, where there may be fitting, we may touch on some things for Raw. Raw was slightly eventful, but not crazy, you know, no major crazy storyline turns or changes. So, I'll give you this week's Raw in a nutshell. The Lana, Rusev, Bobby Lashley storyline, still very much going, apparently.
Awesome.
That's all you need to know.
Great.
But yeah, so Kyle, let's kick off War Games. So, of course, you know, one of the big things that War Games was leading up to was Survivor Series, where Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT. You know, some big questions was Raw or SmackDown or the main, you know, the quote-unquote main roster going to show up? What's going to happen? In the main event with Team Ciampa versus the Undisputed Era, will Ciampa find that fourth man? And then one thing that I was really looking forward to, because I was very curious how it was going to go, was the first ever women's War Game match. So, I'll be honest, you know, the first match I'm going to need you to help me with. I didn't really see it. I kind of was multitasking through a little bit of the show. I haven't had a chance to run through the whole show, but I did see the last two matches in full. So,
All right, so here we go. Up first on the preview show or the kickoff show, we had Angel Garza, who defeated Isaiah Swerve Scott. You'll know Angel Garza as enter name Garza. He gets to keep the Garza no matter what he does. And Isaiah Swerve Scott used to be known as Shane Swerve Strickland. So he gets to keep the Swerve.
That's right. Strickland. Yes.
This match was okay. They're the kind of the up and coming talent for NXT, and I think really that's as NXT moves towards being again the third brand. These are the previous show matches or the ones where they're going to get the opportunities to get people interested in some of the new talent. Angel Garza carried his tearaway pants gimmick
right
from Impact and AAA into NXT. I don't think he needs to do it every time. It just, I don't know, stops in the middle of the match, does the tearaway thing, and I don't know.
Too gimmicky.
That's right.
Too gimmicky. And I haven't seen too much of Garza in NXT. I do remember him very much from Impact, where he was a pretty good talent.
Yeah.
You know, definitely, I think NXT is a great spot for him. At first, I kind of thought it was one of the Colon brothers when he first came in, and then I was very much wrong that it is Angel Garza.
Yeah, so, you know, we looked at this, and, you know, the match was all right. It was what it was. It wasn't very long. Yeah. It really was just kind of to fill some space. So that being said, there isn't really much to talk about it.
No, 7 minutes and 35 seconds, open the show. Now I would just say, seeing very quick highlights of it, surprising they used that match. Now, once again, I know it was the pre-show, but to kind of kick off the event overall, where, you know, TakeOver is usually five matches, pre-show, in this case, having one match and the main show having four matches, I get it. And some of the other matches were a little lengthier, but I don't know. I don't know if this one was the match to kick off the event to be. But
no, it probably wasn't. But so here's the other challenging part I found with watching TakeOver. Is that I didn't know a lot of the backstory because I haven't really been able to keep up with NXT. I wish...
A lot of wrestling.
I wish I had because it would have made the night even better than I felt like it was.
Right.
Just to really get the full extent of things. But that's where maybe this Angel Garza, Isaiah Scott thing could have come from something else that I wasn't aware of.
And that's a very good point because obviously it could easily be due to our ignorance of not... You know, we watch a lot of wrestling, but obviously, you know, we can't watch everything. And, you know, maybe there was a build and maybe there was a reason why they were facing each other that we just simply did not know about. So,
that's right.
But yeah, but anyways, good go, guys. Good job, Swerve. Yeah.
So, on top of that, right before the show started, Mia Yim was attacked backstage. They weren't sure who did it, but while she was in the ambulance, it was decided by Captain... Rhea Ripley, that Dakota Kai would take her place.
That's what I called last week.
Yeah, so I'm not too sure what the story was in terms of, you know, why Dakota Kai specifically or what the scenario is. But she took over. There was definitely some other story surrounding them. I'm just not entirely sure what it was. So as we go into the first match of the night, it's the Women's War Games, first time ever. Again, we're kind of missing some of the story behind it, but I didn't think you really necessarily needed to, because all of the people involved were all well worth it.
Right.
So, we start off, this was a very solid match. There is obviously a story that's brewing because partway through it, you have Tegan Nox, who's supposed to come in, and Dakota Kai attacks her and rips off her knee brace and bashes her knee over and over again with a door. So Tegan can't commit, and Dakota leaves. So then it's really a 4-on-2 for the entire rest of the match.
Right.
So you're looking at 27 minutes, of which most of it was 4-on-2. And the women put on a hell of a show. They each had their part. They each played all well. Candice LeRae is fun to watch. Rhea Ripley is a star. I would even say she is a stud. I don't really know what the female version of a stud is. Studette. That being said, you know, she did a really fantastic job. Io Shirai had this incredible... She was being... I think it was her who was holding Candice LeRae up, and she went back and forth and back and forth, back and forth, building up speed just to do a flying kick at her. It was very impressive. This is what really started War Games out in its best bet. And on top of that, you know, again, another NXT pay-per-view where they came out to put on a show. And in this first match, first ever Women's War Games, it did not disappoint. And I think there's potential then, if you're going to do War Games year over year, that there's nothing to say that we can't have a women's match of this type every year.
No, 100%. And I think what was good about this was, you know, I kind of look at, you know, a lot of these female performers' performance that night versus, you know, previous storylines or, you know, individual matches or what we've known about them. In this case, it almost seemed as if the women were a lot more, you know, a lot more of themselves. They put a lot more of themselves into the match. You know, Rhea Ripley, you know, even Candice LeRae, you know, I don't know, just over the last coming weeks leading up to it to now with War Games being here, it's, I don't know, I guess it's kind of hard to put a, you know, to put an exact definition on it, but I think it's just, it's nice to see that the females are finally coming into their own. And they're kind of, I don't know, I guess creative freedom almost looks like. Mm-hmm. It's less, you know, kind of when you watch AEW females wrestle, it's very scripted. You know, it's very spotty. You know, very run to the ropes and such. And, yeah.
So, up next, we had the triple threat match to determine the number one contender for the NXT Championship, which was now going to be placed on Survivor Series. Not sure what the reasoning behind the move, but we had Pete Dunne, Damian Priest, Killian Dane. Pete Dunne comes out on top. I don't think that was really a surprise. Damian Priest had this homage to the Outsiders gear on, where he had the
Scott Hall
vest and the Kevin Nash pants. I don't know. You know, this was an all right match. Again, triple threats are really tough. These guys had very varying styles, with Pete Dunne being considerably smaller than the other two, either in height or in weight. I just felt like it was okay, but it definitely was the weakest match for me on the show.
Right. And, you know, the good thing about Pete Dunne is that he wrestles big. You know, when you look at Damian Priest or Killian Dane, you know, he's kind of got, I don't know, like, he was the predictable outcome based off of knowing who is going to go in to face Adam Cole at Survivor Series, you know, and especially, too, when I kind of think of, like, who can put on that show, who can represent NXT, it was Pete Dunne. Damian Priest, kind of new to the NXT style and the NXT brand. Killian Dane, once again, rebranding himself and putting so much more into from what he was previously to NXT. Sanity, main roster Sanity, that didn't really accomplish anything. It's great to see him where he's at. And if anything, even though I'm sure Priest or Killian Dane would have given a great match with Adam Cole, I just think, once again, a slow burn is the best type of burn for some of this new talent, and it's just, it would have been too quick, too much.
Yeah.
You know, Priest and Dane are on a great, great uphill when it comes to just developing and the NXT audience learning more about Killian Dane, and, you know, it's really hard to go from, to see someone go up and then come back down and to still grow a new founder of respect like Killian Dane has done. And Damian Priest, you know, Punishment Martinez and Ring of Honor, I was a huge fan of his, big guy. You know, he's someone that can almost, I almost see him going the walk of like a Baron Corbin, but I think they should take his time with
him
more.
They're going to need
to. Because he's got a different look and a different vibe than, you know, other bigger, slimmer men his size that in the past have not worked. So that's where I want to see them take the time a bit more. But Pete Dunne, you knew, and as he did, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, put on a hell of a show. Because, yeah, Pete Dunne, kind of like I was saying before, it's hard to describe, but, you know, he might not be, to your point, as big weight-wise or as height-wise, but he always wrestles big.
Yeah.
You know, so his size has never really been a problem for the performance he can put in. So, happy he won.
Yes. So, another thing with Damian Priest, right, is he's got kind of a Aleister Black type thing going,
right.
You know, with it, with the writing and like the kind of the fiery, like churchy writing,
right, right.
So they got to be really careful that he's not a poor man's
Aleister
Black.
An Aleister Black 2.0.
That's right,
exactly.
So I agree that they need to take their time with him, figure out. I haven't really heard him on the mic or anything like that. So figuring out how he fits into that, and then go from there. Up next, Finn Balor taking on Matt Riddle, defeating Matt Riddle in Finn Balor's first match back in NXT.
Yep.
Finn Balor saying that he wanted to go to NXT.
Right.
And I think that was huge. And I think that was huge on a couple of things. One, it proves that NXT isn't necessarily a demotion to go there.
100%.
And especially with it's on Wednesday nights, 2 hours live, you know, they get their own eyes. Right, they're not sharing it with anybody else in WWE. If you're going to watch, yes, they're competing with AEW, but if you're watching NXT, you get 2 hours of NXT on its own. And Finn came back with the edge that I think was struggling to find in the quote-unquote main roster when he was on Raw.
Right.
He had the momentum until he got injured, and then he never really got it back.
No.
And it wasn't a lack of his efforts. I don't think Vince necessarily saw what other people saw, and I think they went, the fail-safe method was, okay, we're not too sure what to do, let's bring out the demon. Let's remind people who Finn Balor is. Okay, we've done the demon, okay, let's go back now and see if we can get this working.
Yep.
I loved even watching the vignette leading up to this match, mentioning the Prince is back, He's got the guns out. You know, a la Prince Devlin, or Prince Devlin?
Prince Devitt.
Devitt, right, yeah. Sorry. It feels very Bullet Club,
yeah,
original.
Very, very edgy.
Right, the original Bullet Club, the thing that people saw in Finn in the first place, and I like it. I like the edge behind it. I think he plays... We all run into this problem, I think, with the pure heels and pure faces, and then the weird mixture in the middle. And he fits into the middle. He's the bad guy that everyone wants to cheer for. But that's okay, because I think he plays it well.
Yeah.
He's the anti-establishment guy, and, you know, as long as he still rocks that, you know, that all-black outfit, I think it's huge in terms of keeping his visual.
Yeah, and I think the cool thing, and yeah, and especially when we want to say things as we've monikered with, you know, people in AEW and people, you know, like the OC and everyone, it doesn't get original Bullet Club than Finn Balor, because for those who don't know, Finn Balor created the Bullet Club.
Yeah.
He coined the phrase Bullet Club, and it was him and his friends, you know. So, and to see, and I think, you know, and you hit a really good point that I think it's not easy to do, but when you do, you know, we've seen, you know, Becky do it, and we've seen Seth do it, and we've seen Roman try, you know, it's, and I'm not even going to stem it as like the Stone Cold, where you can be a badass and everyone loves you. It's really, you know, being yourself, being carefree, you know, being very open and expressed, but being tough. That balance is what makes someone very lovable in the eyes of a wrestling fan, because when you're looking at Finn Balor, you're going, look at him, look at his physique, look at his look, look at his movement in the ring, and look how, it's not that he doesn't give a shit, it's that there's just enough level of, I'm going to do things my way,
yeah,
that really carry things through to the character. And even Matt Riddle has the same kind of thing. Now, Matt Riddle a little differently, where, you know, he's got the bro gimmick, and a lot of it is a tough guy regime, but also that's why a lot of people love him. Because with Matt Riddle, once again, if you've been following him, he is a former UFC fighter. He got released from the UFC on a 4-fight winning streak. Matt Riddle was, in the octagon, a very big deal. So Matt Riddle is the type of person who, he could beat the crap out of you. And he transitioned that into wrestling. And I think just being very open, here I am, whether I win or lose, you're going to get the best of me.
Yeah.
You're going to get the best me that you can. So I love these two, especially too. It was perfect where it didn't need to be a whole lot of story behind it, in the sense of these guys have this big boiling rivalry. It was very much Finn's back. The big, you know, the big event, the big show part of it was Finn's returning match to NXT on a takeover, and also the fact that he's facing Matt Riddle, who is an up-and-comer, you know. So if anything, the fact that Matt lost isn't a loss to Riddle. It if anything, it gains how well he did against Balor.
Yeah, no, so, they put on a hell of a show.
Oh yeah,
I agree. It level sets that, yes, you know, Matt Riddle, he was on a roll, thinking that this is now his turf, and Finn Balor comes back and just reminds him.
Yep.
I was here first.
Wasn't that long ago.
I'm
was the
back.
King. Yep.
I'm not going anywhere. We didn't see a coup de grace, which I really liked.
Yep.
We got this 1916, which is, a modified DDT. It looks a little bit like Bobby Roode's...
Glorious DDT.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Which I like. I think it suits better. They put on a back and forth. It was a fantastic match. And 14 minutes and change is the perfect amount.
Perfect for two people with this caliber of skill that can take it and make a story interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, if this would have hit like 20 plus minutes, different story, but perfect amount of time to tell a story.
All right. Up next, the final match of the night.
The big one.
The big one. The longest match of the night, but that's not a complaint. We had the Undisputed Era, which is their third in a row. They're the old, they have been all three War Games, but this time it's the full unit.
Yep.
Versus Team Ciampa, with Tommaso Ciampa, Keith Lee, Dominik Dijakovic, and the biggest surprise, which had a massive pop, Kevin Owens coming back. It is classic NXT gear.
Yep.
I just loved it, and what I also loved was it created another story to go into Survivor Series with. It'll create a little bit of story going into Raw and further going about where does Kevin Owens fit? Where does he see himself? Because we've decided that NXT is now it's a third of equal brand, it creates those options of, well, maybe Kevin does go back to NXT.
Yep.
But it's not a bad thing.
Nope.
It's just, you know, we got to see where it goes. But Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic, they had fantastic matches one-on-one. They remind me of The Bar. When The Bar was going through the Mick Foley decision of the best out of seven or whatever.
Right.
They have similar, but yet not too similar wrestling styles, but they complement each other well.
Right.
And to put them with Tommaso Ciampa wasn't a disservice to the match. Obviously, they didn't have the cohesiveness like the Undisputed Era, but I think that makes sense.
And I don't think anyone will.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, it would, if anything, it would be a disservice to the Undisputed Era if a team did, because of how solid a unit and how long of a, you know, how long tenured of a team they've been. It just makes sense.
Yeah. And I think, you know, all in all, like, there were some moves in there that was fantastic. We got the Canadian Destroyer and Panama Sunrise, what it was called, right onto the metal part.
Which I will say to that, watching it again, I feel it was a potential botch turned into
something else,
something more. I think when he went down, I don't think Kevin was in a right position, but quickly he turned it into a, I'm trying to reverse this.
Yeah.
And then it turned into Cole turning it into, yeah, like it was very well, because at first I'm like, ooh, wait, and then instantly I was no longer thinking about the potential loss. It was the gain. So,
and you know, each person had their moments. Kevin Owens got the splash onto the table. Everybody represented themselves well. I think this was really a fantastic match. It, to me, highlights the uniqueness of War Games, the War Games match, and also why we have it. Because you paired the right, not, they may not be the best four against four, but they all worked to put on a great show, and it proved well. And then Tommaso Ciampa, I don't, it's a white noise, right? But that's what Sheamus calls it. Is that officially the name of it?
Oh, it, there's lots of names for
right.
it.
Right, so, but that's,
but white noise is usually what it's been
and
called.
And so that's what
WWE.
Tommaso did to Adam Cole.
Off the top.
Which was ballsy.
Very.
Onto the table, the pin makes sense. It, no discredit to the Undisputed Era for their efforts, because as we see coming up in Survivor Series, they certainly did not disappoint.
Oh, God, no.
So all in all, for me, this was another great match. Other than the first match, which was kind of like, man, I don't really care. And even the triple threat match wasn't bad. It just wasn't as good as the other three. This was another solid performance.
Oh, God, yeah.
And it was very interesting to see how this would carry through to Survivor Series. How much would it impact these guys to be able to perform on that same level the next night?
Yeah. No, 100%. No, so the match was great right out the go. You know, the positioning, who was coming out first. I was a little nervous about Dominik Dijakovic, to be honest. I didn't know if his style would transition well in a War Games type match. Same thing with Keith Lee. But I wasn't as worried because I knew no matter what, it was going to be a big man's move, which he does in regular matches. He just did it in the cage instead. You know, tempo, right? I love the spot where when Adam Cole was coming out and before he even got in there, it was pulling the tables out, throwing them into the ring. More tables, everyone's erupting. And then he puts a table behind him here and Tommaso just comes out, grabs him by the head and shoves him back into the table.
Yeah.
Beautiful spot.
Yeah.
Because it was very much building of the hype and then stifling it and going like, shut, like I can shut this down at any given moment. How apropos that he was the one that shut Adam Cole down. With the move off the top of the cage, and but no, it was a really good story told, especially all the way coming up to, you know, the Kevin Owens spot where I really loved how they played. At first, I was kind of thinking, well, usually when you don't know if they're gonna have an opponent, you go, you know, Everyone's out, everyone's coming out, getting into the cage, and then eventually it's, is there a fourth person? It's like, I found my fourth man, boom.
Yeah.
But in this case, it was, it just started. You know, four in one cage, three in another. So the tempo during the entire match was very much, they're going to be down a man. But then eventually, how apropos, boom, you know, time hits, Kevin Owens comes out, crowd erupts, and he gets right in there, and he puts on a show, and you can tell, once again, levels.
Yeah.
And Kevin Owens put on a damn good show. I was very impressed with the move. It was very gutsy, but I was also very impressed with how Ciampa protected Cole during that fall. When you watch how he really cradled, you know, his neck around his arms, and he kept it solid, even with the impact and hitting the ground. He never let it go to make his neck snap back at any given time. You know, so good on Ciampa for giving that move, not falling, and, you know, for Cole trusting him to do that. Because that was just absolutely crazy. And yeah, and if anything, you can kind of almost funny to say that, you know, it's almost like a, minus the cage, it's almost like a Survivor Series type match.
Yep.
You know, so very fitting that the War Games kind of happened around the same time as Survivor Series. But no, 38 minutes, 26 seconds. It did not feel like 38 minutes at all. But yeah, I would say I agree. You know, when you really look at the show, even though a lot of it was combining together, combining pieces for an overall cause, where one of the big causes of the whole thing was Ciampa and Cole. Ciampa wanting Goldie back, you know, wants that title back. This, even though, yeah, Garza, you know, Swerve Scott, and, you know, Pete Dunne against Damian Priest, Killian Dane, they're not as caliber matches as previous takeovers.
Yeah.
But everyone brought it, and everyone put on a great event. So I was a big fan of the event.
Me as well. All right, so that wraps up our NXT TakeOver show. Up next, we will talk about Survivor Series, break down the matches, and so stay tuned.
Yeah, be right back. What is going on? Welcome back, everyone. All right, let's get into the main event of the weekend, Survivor Series. So, very interesting. So, from, you know, three matches on the pre-show, several matches on the main show. I'll tell you, you know, we're going to break down each match, give some just high-level overview of, you know, who is in it, who won, who lost. What was your feelings of, the, you know, take away specifics, what was your feelings walking into Survivor Series, and then what were your feelings when it was done?
So, I mean, I was a bit concerned with all the triple threats.
Right.
Very challenging to deal with.
I know you're not a very big triple threat
fan. I'm okay with it. It's just, it's hard to follow.
Right.
Because it tends to be like, one person's down, two people compete. Then one other person, then one of those two goes down, the other guy gets back up, and then those two compete. And so I just feel like it's always challenging to sell the story. I was interested to see how NXT was going to fare. I was, all in all, I feel like USA Network benefited and didn't benefit from all of these changes, in that SmackDown is clearly the A show now, and really Raw is competing with NXT as the B show, just based on the changes and things going on.
Oh yeah.
So I was interested to see how things were going to go, how these people were going to play out. I would have preferred more one-on-one special matches, like we had Adam Cole and Seth Rollins and Adam Cole and Daniel Bryan. But even then, I was still happy with a lot of the matches that were set up. So for me, it was really going to depend on how much they were going to give NXT. I take issue with invasion angles because it instantly weakens the second whoever gets invaded.
Okay.
In this case, NXT came out super strong. But I was also interested to see if any stories were going to carry over from TakeOver into Survivor Series.
Right. So, what was your...
So, I will tell you, given all the matches, 10 matches in total, I liked the length of time. It was two and a half to 45. It wasn't, you know, nothing that, looking at it, not a single match over a half an hour.
Right.
Most of them under 20, which I think was perfect. I'm always concerned with Survivor Series type matches when you go back and forth and back and forth.
You're avoiding the question, Kyle. What was your overall thoughts of Survivor Series?
I thought there was strengths and I thought there was weaknesses. To me, it was not my favorite pay-per-view, but I certainly...
There we go.
What I enjoyed quite a bit. There's just some other things that weren't okay. I know.
I know it's hard. I know it's hard. That's where I would say save the nitty gritty for the nitty gritty. We're gonna get into the nitty gritty. But no, I agree. And I exactly. So for me, it was overall. I thought it was a great show. I think where I wouldn't change anything different. I would change the positioning of the matches.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think some big changes could have ended up being. But, you know, clearly we're both very itchy to get into the nitty-gritty. So let's get into the nitty-gritty. First match on the pre-show, 10-team interbrand tag team battle royal match. That's what you call a filler.
Yep.
And one thing was, wasn't really built going into it too much, but, you know, obviously the theme of the night was a notch on the belt for each brand.
Yeah.
Funny thing to compare. This year, the pre-show matches counted as the notch. Last year, Raw versus SmackDown, the pre-show did not.
Yeah.
That's when the New Day won.
Yeah.
A SmackDown spot, like a win, but they didn't count it in the overall, and SmackDown made it very much known the Tuesday night and 2 days after, going, we won one, so we won.
Yeah.
Like, come on. But of course, yeah, so the participants you had in it were the OC, Gallows and Anderson, the Fashion Police, which was funny, Fashion Police, Tyler Breeze and,
Breezango.
Breezango, what's his name? Fandango. There we go. Sorry. Fandango earlier, tweeted, before the event was the, behind the mat photo when oh my goodness, what was his name, when he was kind of telling Terry Funk that he wasn't booked.
Oh, the referee.
Yes, I'm just trying to remember his name.
Could not tell you.
Okay, you guys are probably screaming at your phones right now, but I'm blanking. But anyways, so it was kind of funny. It was a really indicator where it was like, but Terry, I'm not booked. I can't be there. He was telling everyone he wasn't booked, but he was booked. So he kind of swerved everyone. But Fashion Police, Heavy Machinery, Ryder and Hawkins, Street Profits, and Ziggler and Rude. Ziggler and Rude did win. Starting the show with SmackDown with one. 8 minutes and 20 seconds. It went pretty quick for 10 teams. For me personally, nothing crazy. Nothing overdeveloping. Nothing really stood out. Ziggler and Rude, were they the... I thought this would have been a really good spot for maybe... give Heavy Machinery one.
Uh-huh.
You know, like if you're just going to give it to anyone, because you have Fashion Police coming back, big fan favorite. Street Profits have kind of been coming up. Ryder and Hawkins had their little time in the light. And Heavy Machinery, big fan favorites. Ziggler and OC just won, you know, the tag team cup at Crown Jewel. So you had many different ways you could go, but Ziggler and Rude, clearly a good establishment as a team. But I would have loved to see Heavy Machinery win. What did you think of the match?
I don't know. It was all right. Anytime these rules were like, if one guy gets eliminated, they both get eliminated. And then a couple of times they went through the middle ropes and then it got a little confusing. Cause I guess I missed, I can't remember who it was specifically, but I missed them go through the middle rope and they were standing on the outside and then they were sitting on the ground. And so I was like, oh, well, why are they still competing? But then they got eliminated right after. I don't know. I just feel like this one was a tricky one because NXT clearly does not have a strong tag team division right now, with the exception of the Undisputed Era, to really showcase them with the rest. Cause predominantly, it was Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, well, Fashion Police.
Yeah.
Is represented in NXT.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Like, you only have one.
Yeah, for sure.
It just feels like this is like the the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
Yeah,
it's like,
just,
hey, let's
just
get
had
some
one. So the stacks were definitely against NXT in this.
Yeah,
match.
I don't know. It's just for me. Yeah. It was take it or leave it. It's on a pre-show.
Fair enough.
This is the epitome of a pre-show match.
Oh yeah.
Just like the Angel Garza Swerve Scott match was. It's what you would expect on a pre-show.
Right. All right, up next. So as of right now, and we'll kind of carry on through. So SmackDown is up one. Second match of the pre-show for the NXT Cruiserweight Championship.
This one was an interesting setup.
Very much
having
so.
Having one from each show who all happen to be cruiserweights and it be for a belt, I thought was interesting to do.
Yes, very much so. So Lio Rush versus Akira Tozawa versus Kalisto. I'll tell you, a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Good little match. Nothing crazy. Lio Rush did win, putting one up on the board for NXT, making it one NXT, one SmackDown. You know, once again, not too... It's ironically enough, 8 minutes and 20 seconds. That match lasted as long as a 10-team interbrand battle royal. But no, I thought it was nice. It really, you know, Tozawa looked good. Lio Rush looked really good. Kalisto always looks good. But if anything, they all complemented each other. And a good mixture of a triple threat. It wasn't just two people, one person on the side. They both kind of fought within trying to get the one up on the other person. So, but yeah, I like the fit. Once again, makes sense. Lio Rush winning. He's got the belt. Keep it on him for the foreseeable future. Only until there's a viable opponent that should really threaten him. Until then, I think you should just keep Lio Rush strong and cocky. But outside of that, what did you think?
No, I kind of fits with you. I don't really have a lot to talk about it. It was an okay match. I just find it really hard with the cruiserweights to where they all fit into the grand scheme of things. Mm. But like I said, I did like that this was for the championship. They had a representation from each one of the shows. So you really weren't sure what was going to happen. And it offered something different than the rest of the night.
Right.
Where nothing else is on the line, obviously with the exception of the NXT championship. But from an interbrand perspective, it offers something different, which was nice to see.
Yeah, and the WWE Championship and the Universal Championship.
From it, yeah, whatever.
Interbrand perspective. I'm joshing.
That hurts.
Third and final pre-show match of the night.
I was surprised. I was surprised this one was on the pre-show.
So that's exactly what I was about to say. I was very surprised this one was a pre-show match, considering the caliber of individuals, where you have the New Day, the SmackDown Tag Team Champions with Big E and Kofi, with the Undisputed Eras as the NXT Champions, with Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, and the Viking Raiders, which, you know, representing Raw as the Raw Tag Team Champions, dominating as all hell Viking Raiders have been lately. Same thing into tonight. Good match. 14 minutes once again for a high caliber with six individuals that are so talented. I thought 14 minutes was pretty good. Good way to close out the pre-show. If anything, I almost looked at that match as your kick into the main event.
I actually thought it was at first, and then I realized what time it was. I was like, nope, it's not.
Nope.
It's...
But no, great overall. That was just bragging rights. Raw got the bragging rights. And of course, when you kind of look at it, that was a Raw win. So the pre-show kind of skimps it a bit, where it's one NXT, one SmackDown, and one Raw.
Yeah.
So you're kind of going into the main show, even keel. So, but overall, I would say outside of the kickoff 10-team interbrand battle royal, I thought, you know, the Cruiserweight and this one was really, really good.
To go into this triple threat match.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I did like was that we have three distinct tag teams. These aren't put together tag guys who just happen to be representing the same brand. So they were all put together. I knew that it made the sense for the Viking Raiders to win because they have the most to lose if they don't.
True.
Everybody else, I mean,
true.
If Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish lose, it's okay. Hey, they just had a hell of a match the night before.
All the Undisputed Era guys have nothing but good excuses to make because of the hell they went through the night before.
Exactly.
You're totally right.
So, and the New Day don't need to win.
Nope.
It's okay.
Nope.
My only complaint about this match, I thought it was a great match, was just the Viking Raiders attire when they came in. The football helmet thing. I thought it looked ridiculous.
Yeah.
That was really only complaint.
It was making the gimmick gimmicky.
Yeah. Like, I think they have they're naturally, I mean, obviously we know Ivar is it Ivar or is it Eric? I can't remember which one it is.
That's what?
The bald one that's married to
Sarah Logan
who are actually follow the Viking
kind of traditions. I believe that's Eric. No, maybe Ivar. Maybe
either
Ivar.
Way. One of them. But they're naturally like that. So I just don't feel like you need to go and do the weird football helmet, Magneto helmet that Eric was wearing, and then the weird Milwaukee eyebrow.
No, that's a very good point. Very good point.
Like you said, I also thought this was the first match of the pay-per-view, and I would have, unless this was, how do you sell people getting into to paying for the subscription to get it? That would be my only other thing.
True. Very good point. Now, question. Let's spin it. So, of course, the NXT before War Games and Survivor Series, we did see the Revival take on the Undisputed Era.
Yep.
Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. Would have this been better if the New Day did not defeat them, and the first time you didn't see the match this past week, but this match would have been the Viking Raiders versus the Revival versus the Undisputed Era? Would have that been better to see it more on a stage? Or was it best to put it on the eyes of NXT on the show?
No, I think the problem is you have smaller guys, you have really big guys, and then you have the New Day that bridge the gap.
Your medium-sized guys.
Right. Yep. And, well, you have a big and a skinny.
Right.
Which make a medium. And so I think this would have complemented better than having the Revival, because I don't think they would have... I think that the Viking Raiders would then squash the both of them.
Right.
It would have been...
Okay,
I
see your point.
It would have been harder to believe that the Revival can take on... can focus on both and take out the War Raiders. It just doesn't really fit with... how I feel it can do. I will also say what I really loved was this is actually the first time I think I can recall of a proper triple threat tag match in which you had one representative from each person in the ring.
Right.
Normally it's just two and you can tag around. I like this. This makes sense to me. And this all in all worked out really well for me, and I did enjoy this match.
No, for sure, and that was a continued theme to make sure you continuously had the representation between Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, and absolutely, and so that was very well done. And every match they did a really good job at balancing three people being in the ring, because at some points you had a lot of action in the ring at some times.
Yep.
Sort of follow, like there's one thing to have a lot of action, but the action you make, you need to allow the fans to watch and stuff. I think one thing that would have been cool, obviously take away the fact that obviously it was about brand, you know the brand battles and everything else. I would have loved to have just seen, you know, when we just want to talk about the NXT versus whoever, I thought it would have been really good just to even have the Undisputed Era versus the Revival.
Yeah.
That's it. That would have been great too. But anyways, dreaming is dreaming. All right, so that's your pre-show. Pretty good pre-show overall. First match on the main show was the female. You know, the female 5-on-5-on-5 Women's Survivor Series Triple Threat Elimination Match. Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT. So, of course, you had Team NXT, which is being represented by Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Candice LeRae, Io Shirai, and Toni Storm. Good crew. Very happy that Io Shirai was in there. Against Team Raw, which was Charlotte, Natalya, Asuka, Kairi Sane, and Sarah Logan. Sarah Logan was the one for me that kind of didn't fit as much. Not saying that she's not worthy, but she's just not in the limelight.
Mm-hmm.
So was that the best Raw had? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Really? And then Team SmackDown being represented by Sasha Banks, Carmella, Dana Brooke, Lacey Evans, and Nikki Cross. Right away, just standing and looking in the ring, NXT looked very dominating. Of course, NXT won this battle. 28 minutes exactly. In this case, the stronger team won, where the overall strength came with NXT. Now, you had some really ups and downs and woes, some really good highlights that we saw. Kairi Sane and Io Shirai kind of facing off, battling off. That was really cool to see. Charlotte Flair and Bianca Belair battling off. That was really cool to see. Raw just fell apart in that match, really. And you kind of got to the point where Io and Candice got injured, got brought to the back. They were away for a bit. And then it came to a point where it was Natalya versus Sasha versus Rhea Ripley. Then it turned into Sasha versus Rhea Ripley. And then Candice and Io came down because they're better. And now it's 3 versus 1.
Yeah.
And of course, with the helped interference of Io and Candice getting in there, and, you know, Io with that big drop kick off the top rope to Sasha helped Ripley pin Sasha Bank. I thought that was a really good story told. It was edgy, where NXT could have won regardless, but it really went to show that no matter, and I really like the fact that it was Sasha and Rhea Ripley, the two last females, quote unquote. And you saw Sasha really, like, this is my house. And at one point, you actually heard her say, like, this is my mother effing house. Yeah. And I love that. I started popping, and I was laughing, and I was like, yes, this is great. And, but overall, good story told. You know, even though the stronger team in NXT, they were the underdogs versus Raw and SmackDown. But definitely glad that NXT won this. Putting NXT 2 to Raw's 1 and SmackDown's 1. Your thoughts on the match?
Wasn't my favorite. I feel like you're right. I think that the overall, when you look at the overall teams, NXT as a whole definitely was stronger than the rest. The other teams just had people that didn't really fit.
Yeah, Dana Brooke didn't fit. Some good people, but
yeah,
Carmella didn't fit.
No, but that it showed though that there's a big drop between your top tier female wrestlers in Raw and SmackDown and the rest.
Yep, very true.
I didn't like that Io and Candice left, because that's what happened in the NXT space.
Right.
Was
a little playoff, something we've already seen.
Yeah. And not to mention, we also have, they just had a match. And so I would have, what we saw in the issue with Charlotte and Asuka, where they play.
Trust me.
So, you know, like, I just feel like that was the only thing that was missing, was they could have played off their previous night's issues.
That makes sense. And that's actually a really good point that I didn't think of, to be honest.
But the rest, like, it was an okay match. I've seen better stories told. We did at one point in time get the thing that I hate, which is you do a move, then somebody does a move on me, then somebody moves on them, and somebody does a move on them, and it just cycles through.
Yes. I'm happy we didn't see that here. Where where I was afraid of is what we saw many, many times before, was all the ladies are outside, and Charlotte does a big old backflip onto them. Yeah. There wasn't so much clunk.
Yeah.
You know, which was really, really good. So,
but, you know, for me, it wasn't my favorite match.
No, fair enough.
But in the end, it wasn't the worst match either.
I would say it was a good way to kick off
the
show. So, of course, yeah. So, now, like I said, so NXT's at 2, Raw's at 1, SmackDown's at 1. Next up, a match that, number one, I knew going into it was going to be really good. And this one, and I'm going to go over my take, because I'm very interested to hear your take on this one. So, obviously, we had the Intercontinental Champion Shinsuke Nakamura taking on the North American Champion Roderick Strong, taking on the United States Champion, quote-unquote, spoiler alert, now former United States Champion, AJ Styles, in a triple threat match, a champion's triple threat match. Went 16 minutes and 45 seconds. The crowd loved Shinsuke Nakamura. There was a very pro Shinsuke crowd. Big notes that I had: the King of Strong Style was back that night. The kicks, the knees, the aggression, the drop kicks, the old like karate type drop kicks he would do in New Japan. Best Shinsuke we've seen since Shinsuke in NXT years ago. Of course, how good is Roderick Strong? You know, even though he's a small guy, just like AJ is, held his own. And I love the battle between Roderick and AJ, where Roddy was very technical, constantly working at AJ's back. Lots of twisted backdrops, back breakers, everything. But then AJ would come back, and you saw him play the back really well, super frustrated, but continue to come back. I would say definitely, you know, with number one, Roderick Strong won, which I thought was very Undisputed Era-ish, took advantage, you know, pinning Shinsuke Nakamura from AJ was going to win, and then literally just a traditional dump to the outside. AJ's so tired, can't get back in time. Roderick won, looked like $1 million, old school King of Strong style. I want to know what you thought about the match. I want to know what you thought about Shinsuke. I want to know what you think about that new Intercontinental belt. And all go.
So I was concerned with this match, just with Shinsuke and AJ and their previous history. They didn't really put on the best of shows.
For sure.
I after watching it, and I was like, oh, Mark was dead on the money. You did call it exactly how he was going to kind of take the opportunity and win. I thought it was a really solid match, and I would have really enjoyed Roderick and AJ. I do not like the Intercontinental Championship. I don't like it.
I think it has potential. I just think it looks like a toy. Too toyish.
I feel like it looks too much like the women's tag belt. And I'm concerned that all the belts are going to go down that road.
Okay.
Not exactly like it, but in terms of that style, that kind of futuristic style, it's also really hard to tell what it is. The Intercontinental title before was very distinguished. The U.S. Right. title is very distinguished. You know what each belt is from far away. You do not know what that belt is from far away. It is hard to read it.
Yo, it is definitely tough. It almost looks like, and we're just pulling up a picture here, so it has potential. And where it has potential is, you know, it almost has the idea of a belt you would see in NXT UK. But I almost felt like Triple H didn't have a say in the look of this belt. You know what I mean? Or he did and someone changed a bunch of stuff.
And I don't think this belt's going to last.
I don't think it's going to last. It's too Masters of the Universe belt buckle looking.
And it's also, like I said, it's really hard to read. Not necessarily the actual words, but just the feeling of it. Like, I can't figure out what it's supposed to show.
Well, it's true. It's very true. And, you know, it's got the classic, you know, Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion on it. All the surroundings. But it is very hard.
It's almost too shiny?
I would say it's...
But dark shiny.
It's too shiny. It's way too shiny. Well, that would have been a pretty cool concept.
All in all, like, I agree. This is the better Shinsuke that we've seen in a long time. Wasn't my favorite match. Wasn't my least favorite match.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
I mean, there's a couple of the matches that I really enjoyed more. That being said, it is what it is.
Well, let's get into it then. So, of course, with that, Roddy brings NXT 3 wins to SmackDown's 1.
That was the other thing. As soon as Roddy won, I knew that it was over. I knew this was going to be NXT's night at the end of the day. This was what was going to happen.
And if anything, one thing, and so glad you brought that up. One thing that I liked about it was it wasn't necessarily a runaway steal by NXT. At the same time, it wasn't this dramatic, it's the main event, we're all tied up, two at a piece, who's going to win? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you would have seen in the past. I kind of liked it where it was like, yeah, you know, obviously the main event had a brand implication on the line with a win for Raw SmackDown. And obviously, you know, SmackDown had the ability to tie things up, but we'll get there. But of course, next up, right after that match, another really good match. This one had nothing to do with a brand outside of NXT. So Adam Cole was defending his NXT championship against Pete Dunne, who won the opportunity the previous night on War Games, defeating Damian Priest and Killian Dane. So of course, once again, Pete Dunne was in a pretty grueling match. Adam Cole was in War Games. You know, this past month, War Games, drop off the top, grueling 14-minute battle against Pete Dunne, manipulating all of his bones and joints, defeating Daniel Bryan, defeating Seth Rollins. I would say, if Adam Cole's not, you know, the wrestler of the year, you know, he's got to be up there. But what a weekend and what a month for Adam Cole. Adam Cole did win, retaining. Awesome match, especially considering it was a legitimate win. You know, reverse Panama to the knee, you know, absolutely, you know, the Panama Sunrise to the apron, then the reverse, reversed Pete Dunne's, what's his finisher? He almost does that and pumps Sue, but then he spins them, but then he went into that, but then reversed it into a Panama. And then got the victory. one thing that I love, and once again, we talked earlier about, you know, badass demeanors and everything. The reason why Adam Cole is there is, yes, he's got a little bit of a heel to him. That's what the Undisputed Era kind of is. But at the same time, as I always say, the worst, the best, worst type of heel is not just the one that's the champion, not just the one that has bragging rights, but the one that can back it up on their own. And this established Adam Cole even more. And once again, made Pete Dunne look great. And it's good to see Pete Dunne back into the limelight, not just about NXT UK. But a good, it wasn't too long either, 14 minutes, yep. A nice good amount of time. But what were your thoughts?
So I think sometimes you get to a point where the match is as expected. It's as great as expected. So I wasn't disappointed. But I wasn't blown away, and it's not necessarily a negative. It's just that I knew it was going to be great.
Right.
Right? And so for me, that's what it came down to. These guys that perform at a certain level, they define NXT, they carry the NXT brand. When you see them, you think, this is the way NXT wrestling is.
Yeah.
They put on a great match, back and forth. You really didn't know who was going to win, or rather that if Pete Dunne did win, you'd be like, okay, I get it. I'm not surprised by that. I'm not disappointed by that. Adam Cole wins. I get it. I'm not surprised. I'm not disappointed.
Right.
So all in all, these guys put on a great match. I'm concerned if they were to try and bump up against bigger guys like Drew McIntyre's and Roman Reigns.
Right.
I think they may have to stay with the Seth Rollins, Daniel Bryan size guys before you get into the big, big guys.
Very true.
But all in all, I'm always going to enjoy a match with these two guys in it.
Oh, 110%. And it was a nice break too, a little break from the brand back and forth. And plus two, this match did one thing and one thing only, and it accomplished that. And here is NXT, and this is what their champion does.
Yep.
And they absolutely nailed that on the head. All right, next up, seventh match of the evening. This one was a big one. Kind of came together, I don't want to say last minute, but it kind of came together last couple of weeks. The last week before Survivor Series is when you saw the challenge. Daniel Bryan battling with himself. You know, is he, you know, like Mr. Earth? Is he the egotistical, you know, arsehole that people saw him driving with Rowan before? Is the Yes Movement back? One thing I will say, and I loved Daniel Bryan's promo the previous week with The Miz when he was on Miz TV before the challenge happened from The Fiend. When Miz was saying, well, what Daniel Bryan, which one are you? And he said, listen, it's not that easy. You can't just bring a movement back. The Yes stuff was so organic that it's not saying it can never come back. It needs the right moment of motivation. So it wasn't that it was off the table. And I loved that because that explanation to me, I was like, that makes sense. That makes total sense. You know, it's because obviously the big thing everyone's waiting for is the Yes move. You know, the big yes, yes, yes to come back. But of course, what we did see was Daniel Bryan, you know, taking his shot against and they did call, even though it's blue, even though it's on SmackDown, they did still call it the Universal Championship. The red light, we did still get that. I know we're both not a big fan of it. It did look like they did a little bit of a different thing with the red light, where it was like a little bit brighter of a red light. But
I will tell you with the red light. At one point in time, I couldn't see Daniel Bryan's face. I saw his hair and his beard and nothing else because the light was so bright and so red against his pale skin.
Right.
I can't handle it. And I don't think it's necessary. I think
it's not WWE's fault though. It's The Fiend's fault.
No. it'll sour me every time.
I get it. I think even if you want to have a spotlight or whatever, and you want to do something a little bit more, you know,
Go dark instead. I'd rather you go dark.
Yeah, but the red is a little much. I would like to see them find a way to kind of get away from that. Funny enough, you know, even though everyone loves Daniel Bryan, very pro Bray Wyatt. Mm-hmm. The Chicago crowd was very happy to see Bray. They did end up turning and being more pro wanting to see the Yes. We did finally see the Yes chant. You know, at one moment in the corner, and he brought it back. He finally did it, and the arena lost its mind. That place erupted. There was not one person in that arena not doing the S chant. You know, no matter what, the Fiend kept getting back up after the knees, everything. This was the first time that someone did the constant get-ups, and I think it was the first time in a very long time, or ever, because usually you go, oh, he's doing like The Undertaker does. He's getting up like The Undertaker. You couldn't keep The Undertaker down. Oh, Ultimate Warrior kept getting up, you know. This was the first time where it was like, oh, crap, you know, Bray Wyatt cannot stay down. And then when I thought that, I was like, oh, damn. Like, they got something here. I'm not thinking and comparing it to people of the past. I'm comparing Bray Wyatt to Bray Wyatt. And I thought that was very important that I thought and felt that way. It was definitely a good fight. Bray won in the end, very convincingly. But, yeah, we got the S chant back. The Fiend still dominating. What was your thoughts on the match? And where do you think... a big question, what's next for Daniel Bryan and The Fiend?
So I think this was the better of the three matches, four matches, although we didn't get the red light in the Finn Balor match.
No, we did not.
This was a better match. I did like that he kept getting back up. It felt more natural that he was getting back up, and he seemed to have a solution for all of Daniel Bryan's things,
right?
But again, the red light just kills me every time. I don't know what's gonna happen. I don't feel like this is not a story that's gonna carry through. I feel like they're gonna move Daniel Bryan in another direction, and I'm so concerned with Bray Wyatt being the champion and running this gimmick that there's a limit, and at some point in time they're gonna hit that limit, and then what? And then that's it for Bray Wyatt. He can't. Yeah. This is as far as he can go without completely changing everything about him and moving into a completely different character, because this is the extreme.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. And I think, if anything, I think our worry probably just comes from the worry of what WWE does to good characters. You know, sometimes. A lot of the times they get it right.
I would rather see them do it, Bray Wyatt, what Brock does.
Huh? Yeah.
Show up 6 or 7 times.
Yep. Have him go away. Go away for a couple months.
But
even as the champion.
Yeah.
You don't need Bruno Sammartino back in the 70s. You saw, like, you didn't see him all the time. A couple months would go by and all of a sudden he would show up and go, it's a big deal. The champ is here.
Yeah. I just feel like there's a way of carrying these stories through that you don't oversaturate with Bray Wyatt.
Yep.
And The Fiend over and over again, where people are like, okay, yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. Or you just need to make sure that everything is a slow burn. You know, storylines are drawn out a little longer. You know what I mean? Like, and I've said it a million times in this podcast, but like the old school days between Randy Orton, Triple H, Edge, Cena, everyone. You know, have them go for several months at a time, a little bit of a back and forth, and then someone prevails. You know, the Fiend can lose. No one's worried about him losing, but it's all about how does he lose,
yeah.
You know, and even then, like, if for whatever reason someone found a way to beat him, it would need to be, like, you can't do this constantly getting up thing, throwing him to electricity and he getting up right away, but then all of a sudden, an F5, 1, 2, 3, Brock Lesnar beats him. You, like, it's gonna have to be something big, but then...
It's gonna be a buried alive match.
Or it's gonna have to be a buried alive match where it's one of those things where it's not about, the stipulation isn't about who bested, it was, I found a way to survive.
Yep.
And I think that will be, you know, a great point to a lot of his, you know, The Fiend's matches. And especially, too, you can also, you know, keep having him go deeper, darker, more maniacal. And then if the day where, for whatever reason, he loses his title, he makes the world burn, literally.
Yeah.
Like, he makes the world burn. Like, and then it's all hell on whoever needs to get the rematch against him and such. So, so we got a little brand type match, but that one was representing SmackDown. All right, so after that we had, and of course going into now, a match that has, I guess brand warfare. So as a reminder, NXT at this point's at 3, Raw's at 1, SmackDown's at 1. So NXT has got the dominating lead so far. But now we go into the men's 5-on-5-on-5 men's Survivor Series triple threat elimination match. So of course we have Team Raw, Team SmackDown, Team NXT. So Team SmackDown, represented by Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, King Corbin, Mustafa Ali, or Ali, and Shorty G, going up against what looked on paper to be the better team, Team Raw, with Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, Kevin Owens, Randy Orton, and Ricochet, and of course the NXT team, where we only found out who the NXT team earlier on the pre-show,
right?
That Shawn Michaels, kind of announced. So definitely a good leg up on NXT. They knew the teams ahead of time, where NXT was kind of able to get a fast one on them. Where that was Tommaso Ciampa, Damian Priest, Matt Riddle, Keith Lee, and Walter. So a little different. Kind of similar to, I would say, what we predicted last week, minus Damian Priest.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely a great match nonetheless. So I'm going to try this. So I kind of kept little track of who was then eliminated slightly. I know they have it there on the screen, but sometimes that's hard to go by. But of course, yes. So Walter was the first one eliminated. For NXT, Shorty G was the next one eliminated for SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Owens for Raw. So very surprising, number one, to see Walter eliminated as the first. And to see Kevin Owens eliminated so early. Of course, I would have kind of assumed that Kevin Owens would have been near the end, where the big build was, Seth Rollins calling out Kevin Owens going, "Are you Team Raw? Are you Team NXT? You were on the show last night. What's going on?" And it was like, "I'm Team Raw. I was doing it for a friend."
Yeah.
But then ironically enough, it is Tommaso Ciampa who pinned Kevin Owens to get him out. To then, of course, Damian Priest gets eliminated by Randy Orton. Randy Orton gets quick pinned by Matt Riddle.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Riddle then gets taken out by King Corbin. Braun Strowman got counted out and could make his way back in, even though this seemed to be an all-out war. I don't even know how it wasn't no disqualification.
Yeah.
Well, that was a little weird. But you did see some good Braun Strowman spots. Braun Strowman with, Keith Lee was some definitely interesting spots. And especially at that one point where you had Keith Lee, Walter, and Braun Strowman all in the ring at the same time. Ricochet then gets eliminated by King Corbin. Ali gets eliminated by Seth Rollins. McIntyre by Roman Reigns. King Corbin gets eliminated by Tommaso Ciampa. Ciampa then, your last bit is Tommaso Ciampa, Keith Lee representing NXT, and then Roman Reigns representing SmackDown and Seth Rollins representing Raw. So there was a little bit of a two-on-one advantage. Ciampa gets eliminated by Seth Rollins. So it leaves one each per brand, Seth, Keith, Roman. You kind of had some Shield shtick, which you gotta love. They gotta play off it. But I'll tell you, at the end of it, Rollins gets eliminated by Keith Lee. Good on Rollins for taking that hit. Keith Lee gets taken out by Roman. SmackDown is the victor. Roman stands victorious. But goddamn, did Keith Lee look good.
Yeah.
Keith Lee looked big, massive, strong. He held it well. I'm not shocked that Roman or Seth were the last ones. Like, come on. Say what you want. You can boo Roman all you want. He's been out of the picture for a long time for the title picture. He is the man. He is good. He's great. It makes sense why the up-and-comer, Keith Lee, loses to Roman, especially mm-hmm. when he was in a kind of a two-on-one spot against, 66% of the Shield and onward. So overall, I think, some really good moments for me. What I loved about it was Seth near the end when it was the three of them, he kind of yells out and, I built it and I'll tear it down. And I thought just the way he said it was pretty cool. Kind of like that homage of him going, I built NXT for what it was and I'll be the one to tear it down right here with your boy. Then he gets beaten by Keith Lee. kind of funny. But I'll say long match, great match, I thought. Everyone had their good moments of looking strong in some shape or form. But what were your thoughts on it?
I thought this one was better than the other match.
The female one?
Yeah. I thought it flowed a lot better. Again, the Braun Strowman thing was weird, but I feel like it's like, well, you don't. Nobody in here that's competing should really pin him. So this is the way you're out of it, is that you don't have anybody here pinning him unless they stacked on two on top. Would have been the other solution. I was surprised that Walter got out so early. I was surprised that Kevin Owens got out so early. I didn't mind the end. I thought the end worked out well. All in all, I mean, I enjoyed it for what it is, which is this. And because it's a triple threat, you really weren't sure how it was going to go. And thankfully, even though some of the pins were quick to go between, it wasn't like pin within the first 30 seconds.
Right.
Or Drew McIntyre does a claymore, and then Shorty G does something else, and then so-and-so does this.
Then an RKO, then a pop-up powerbomb, exactly. Then a slam, right.
So I think this one played off really well. Again, I agree that, you know, Roman Reigns winning, I think, in all of the SmackDowns opportunities, I think this one was probably the one that made the most sense for them to win.
Yep.
Everything else would have been like, really? So I think for me, I was satisfied with the way this went.
Yep, no, same here. And plus, of course, that takes SmackDown up a notch. So NXT's at 3, SmackDown's at 2, and Raw is at 1. So only two more matches left. The next one has nothing to do with brand supremacy. We had Brock Lesnar defending his world championship against Rey Mysterio. Nothing. It's funny. It was a 7-minute match. It definitely felt longer. They tried to throw everything at Brock Lesnar. And I would say the story and the build-up to where we were done well. You know, we kind of were kind of going, oh, the Rey Mysterio retirement storyline months ago was kind of, ooh, and Sun wanting to keep him. We're both sitting here going like, well, where are we going here? This is kind of silly. To now, Rey Mysterio is facing off for the, you know, the WWE Championship. I love the points. I love the, I don't want to call them false finishes, but the hyped spots in the middle of the match where Dominic came in, low blow, you know, like definitely kind of getting to his own. But then what I do like about it is it wasn't like Dominic. I would have been more upset if Dominic all of a sudden got these big spots and these big moves. Like he got a little bit over Brock, but then he tried to go up on the top, picked him right up, dumped him on his neck. And then in a snap of a fingers, that's it. I'm finishing this match. And did. You know, caught Ray jumping off the top, F5, got out of there. You almost like, I was playing with you, but now when the shit started to get real, boom, like I need to finish this, and I finished it fast. So, kind of was what it was. Of course, very different swerve and turn the night after, where Rey Mysterio then defeats AJ Styles the next night on Raw, and he's now the new United States champion. So Rey's in the picture still in some way, shape, or form. But at the same time, kind of went the way. It was a good little show, good little story, end to a story that was pretty interesting the entire time. What were your thoughts? What's next for Brock Lesnar?
I thought the build-up was better than the match. I didn't really like the match.
Yep.
I don't know. For a no-holds-barred, it wasn't brutal enough. The lead-up was more brutal. I didn't see Rey Mysterio ever winning.
No.
And so
it would have been quite the swerve, though, if he did.
Yeah, but to bring his son in, like, I think they're pushing it too much. Like, clearly he's signed and he's going to be at the Performance Center. Like, it's just, it's too much for me to be like, let's give the son a rest now. Same thing with Kane. Like, I like Kane Velasquez. So he came out, did the match. Now he's back off. And I think that there was opportunities there.
I think there's a spot for Dominic. I think just very sparsely.
Yeah, so this was too much. As for Brock, like, I don't really know because it's tough with, are we going to see him more on TV or not more on TV? And
just to that, now that he's kind of what made his way to Raw because of Rey, is Brock back on SmackDown? Or is he a Raw?
I think he'll stay on Raw. I think just he'll stay with Paul Heyman.
Right.
So I think Paul's going to protect him. And so I don't really know how this is going to roll out, but he's got to find another story that is better suited to tell a great story because he has that opportunity. We just haven't really seen a lot of it lately.
No, very true. And one good thing is, no matter what, Brock Lesnar's good. Brock Lesnar has good matches. Like, he's good at what he does, so no matter what. But especially now, I think what's going to be very interesting is now we're going into TLC near the end of the year. Hop, skip, and a step. We're at the Royal Rumble. You know, and then we're kind of whatever they want to call it, Great Balls of Fire or Fast Lane or whatever they're going to call it in between. Mm-hmm. And then WrestleMania, ironically enough. So definitely the road to WrestleMania is coming very, very soon. So I think with NXT, with Raw and SmackDown, if done right, I think you could potentially see some really, really good building storylines on the way too. I'd be very interested to see how everything goes, especially up into Royal Rumble, one of my favorite events. Other than a WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, last part, main event. NXT's at 3, SmackDown's at 2, Raw's at 1. This is the last brand, the champions triple threat match. You have the NXT women's champion, Shayna Baszler. You have the SmackDown women's champion, Bayley, and the Raw women's champion, the man, Becky Lynch. 18 minutes and 10 seconds, I would say, for a main event, not bad, pretty good length. Shayna Baszler winning, I thought, was great, because Becky winning made almost too much sense, and Bayley winning almost seemed like maybe a, like, I don't know.
It wouldn't make any sense,
yeah. Kind of to say. You know, by submission, of course, that was kind of the cool spot, too. But no, I thought Shayna Baszler looked, this was probably one of her best performances. I will say, however, the match after seeing the electricity, say what you want, the electricity with Brock and Ray, you know what I mean? There was lots of action, lots of commotion. And then before that, the men's 5-on-5-on-5, lots of action, lots of commotion. The Fiend, Daniel Bryan, Adam Cole, Pete Dunne, Roderick Strong, Shinsuke, you know what I mean? On and on and on. I thought some of this was a little slow in between for a main event. There wasn't anything major. There wasn't great large pops in regards to, you know, the next spot, the next story told in the ring. It was very easy keel, you know, too much walking around, too much waiting for that moment. I've heard that that's where some of the sore parts were for a main event. So I would say glad that Shayna won, okay match. Looking back, when I said earlier I would reposition, I wouldn't have put this as the main event. Looking back now, where do you stand? Where do you think?
So I think, you know, I'm in agreement. This wasn't the greatest of matches. I think that there was opportunities there to the story again. I think the build-up was better than the match. I'm concerned with Becky, that Becky puts on a better build than she does a match. I don't know if this really would have worked out if it was just Becky and Shayna or Bayley and Shayna. I think there's concerns there that each has their own strengths. I don't think they mesh well together. I think Shayna and Becky and Sasha would have been a much more interesting match.
True.
Because it would have been a lot more physical.
True.
I was not surprised by the ending, but at the same time, I was a bit surprised just in the sense that, like, Becky wasn't really involved even at the end until all of a sudden she wakes up and reminds Shayna that this is still her spot, her situation, and also drops the F-bomb,
yep.
Which I thought was pretty funny.
Yes.
And that's kind of how it ended. So it almost stole NXT's thunder by reminding them that, you know, Raw is here
Becky's the number one.
Yeah.
So, and if anything, too, one thing for me was, you know, Bayley's gimmick coming down to the ring. Her little headgear.
Yeah.
She was very flat-faced. She almost seemed, like, not happy to be here at all.
Yeah.
Like, very, like, restless face going into the ring. No emotion whatsoever. And it wasn't even, like, no emotion like a heel. It was just, she just didn't look like she cared to be there at all. So, I think that kind of played to a little bit, too. But 18 minutes and 10 seconds capped off this year's 2019 WWE Survivor Series with NXT 4, SmackDown 2, Raw 1. Really putting, you know, if you're kind of talking about brand supremacy, NXT being the number one brand that night, SmackDown 2, and Raw for the first time in its history, almost looked like a quote-unquote the other show, the C show. So, but no, so that's all for Survivor Series. How about, Kyle, we take a very quick break, and then we will get into our last segment of the show where we kind of quickly talk about some the C4 event coming up and just some random miscellaneous items.
Sounds good. We are back, everyone. Thanks very much for sticking around.
Hey, hey.
So we just wanted to kind of, you know, give a little bit of preview of tomorrow night's C4 show. It's their anniversary show. It's got some interesting matches.
I feel like it's always their anniversary show.
It's true.
And I love C4. I don't mean that as a knock. I just feel like there's always some kind of a moniker of an anniversary. So.
That's true. I mean, to be honest with you, that's probably a little bit true. But that being said, so we're going to break down matches very quickly, just give everyone a heads up where we're at. Things have been finalized now. There's a couple of changes, but we'll get through that. So first one on the card is three-way match, Remix Kevin Bennett, Scrapper James Stone, and Junior Benito. We've seen Scrapper James Stone and Junior Benito before. They were there at the last show, so we're adding in Kevin Bennett. So I think this will be a solid match. Junior Benito, again, is somebody we should all be looking out for down the road. Once he just gains a little more mass to him, I think he's going to be pretty fun to watch. Well, he's a pretty skinny kid.
Gain some mass, Benito.
Yeah, he's got to eat some burgers. Also, Sexy Eddie will be making an appearance. He's got some sort of announcement to make with regards to his career.
He's retiring.
I don't know.
He was spoiled online.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you just spoiled it for me.
He announced it. Later, he like tweeted something.
I don't follow him.
Well,
no offense,
it's like
but
the
I
one
know.
Person you don't follow.
Yeah. Anywho,
I completely made that up. I could be lying. I probably could. Going someone that has been wrestling that long.
I know. I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Up next, we have the team challenge. A couple of regulars out there: Space Pirate, Shane Sabre, and Space Monkey, taking on Fight or Flight, Juan Vertigo, and Gabriel Fuerza. I think this is, you know, kind of going to be your solid tag match. Something, you know, a comfortable match. They're going to put on the stuff they do. It's not going to be a surprise, but it'll still be a great way to kind of carry the night through.
Right.
Up next is one of the changes to the card. The four-corner scramble. We have Aiden Prince, the return of Cecil Nix, the Kanawake Destroyer, Kevin Blanchard, and Alexa Nicole is going to be in the match now instead of Danhausen.
Cool.
Yeah, so Cecil Nix, I'm happy to see Cecil back.
Yeah,
you know, he's got revitalized his you know, his heart for the wrestling business. So we're happy to see him back. So he will be there, crowd favorite, and hopefully he comes out with a win.
Yeah.
The other piece of that is the special challenge, which originally was supposed to be Lefisto versus Tony Deppen. Tony Deppen's always fun to watch. Now we are happy to see that you know, Danhausen is still here. Unfortunately, you know, hopefully whatever is going on with Lefisto, she's had to cancel a couple of her shows. Hopefully everything is okay, and we will kind of see what happens from that. But you know, obviously, you never wish anything ill will towards anybody.
Oh goodness!
So hopefully, we'll see her back relatively soon.
Yeah.
All right. So here comes a new one, first time ever. The Dark Order. We still get them. C4 for life. They might be AEW. By the way, sidebar, the new promo they dropped, super clever. We get to see a little bit of Evil Uno without the mask, and kind of drawing into this kind of cult-like experience. So you should check that out. It's really good. Taking on Bear Country, Bear Bronson, and Bear Beefcake. I'm not familiar necessarily with them.
Oh, they wear the some guys weird with masks. The mask with the bear thing.
Yeah.
I saw them on the Independence maybe once. Not seen them. I've seen videos.
Yeah,
not seen
so I've
them,
never
but
seen them before, so it'll be interesting to see how they operate. Obviously, the Dark Order are going to get a huge pop, and I imagine they're going to come out with the win.
Makes sense.
Another first-time ever match, Madman Fulton, for WWE fans, Sawyer Fulton, taking on Josh Briggs. These are two very big men, very beardy men, and they'll put on a hell of a show.
Oh, Josh Briggs, yeah.
Little OVE versus the Evolve champion.
Yeah.
Happy to see Josh Briggs having some great things done. And we'll see where this goes from here.
100%.
Yeah, so it's another one I'm looking forward to, because you never know what you're going to get out of these guys. They're definitely going to go in the chairs, almost guaranteed.
Oh, they are.
So somebody's going to have to dodge that.
Someone's going to die.
So this is another interesting match. So this is a double championship trios match.
Okay.
So we have the Diamond Tiger, Kobe Durson, Matt Angel, and the C4 Underground champion, Jonathan Rukin, taking on TDT with the unkillable Kevin Blackwood. My assumption is whichever team wins gets both belts.
Double championship trios match. That usually means, yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. I've never seen one of those before.
So it can So literally, so three, well, two sets of belts with three titles could change hands in one motion.
So it'll be interesting to see. I've never seen that before. I kind of like the idea of a trios champion. I know that AAA does it. I think I mean
like three man tag teams.
Yeah,
yeah. My Ring of Honor has their
So I think WWE's got too many belts.
Yeah.
But I think a trios champion just offers a little bit of variety. So this isn't quite a trios championship, but it's still going to be interesting to see how this all plays out.
I've seen this many times before. The thing is that you never see them actually win. You know what I mean? Like, you never see the other side win all the titles.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if maybe this will be the exception of the rule.
And lastly, our main event, one fall to a finish, the C4 Championship match. The walking weapon, Josh Alexander, your champion, taking on Red Death, Daniel Garcia, who earned this match as a result of the Fighting Back Battle Royal. This one is going to be slap chop heavy. There's going to be a whole lot of hamburger meat. On some chests. These guys are going to go to town. It's going to be pretty crazy. They're definitely getting into some chairs.
Oh,
they're definitely going to be probably a door at some point in time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm interested to see if the Dark Order get involved, because there's a little bit of a story between the Dark Order and Daniel Garcia. But, you know, this one's going to be brutal. This is probably going to be one of the most brutal matches I've seen.
Probably.
Just based on how these guys both go at it.
Brutal, and you also know it's going to be a great match with Josh Alexander.
Yeah.
You know, he always brings it. And, that'll be very interesting event. Especially, I'm very interested for the double championship trios. Especially, you know, Kobe Durst and Matt Angel, you know, two former C4 world champions, fittingly enough. Now tag champions, and then Jonathan Rukin being the C4 underground champion for quite some time. It'd be quite interesting to actually see the heels take all the titles. I think that can be quite the story. If you guys are listening, maybe book it so Kevin Blackwood and Tabanaka team wins.
Yeah, so we'll never know.
Yeah.
We will know.
We will never know.
You never know.
24 hours.
Yes, that's right. So tomorrow night, November 29th, at the usual location, we are Combat Shock, the anniversary show. And next week, we will let you all know how that event went.
Happy anniversary. Also, saw The Butcher and the Blade.
Yes!
Recently, make a little AEW debut.
Yeah, so that was an interesting one. We talked a little bit about it before the before taping. And AEW's going to be really careful. This is the third time in a row that you have a tag team come in as a surprise. First with the Dark Order, then with Santana Ortiz, and now The Butcher and the Blade.
Yep.
Two out of three of those are relatively unknown to that market. Obviously, here in town, we know all three tag teams. And we're all a fan of all three tag teams. It did, again, like the Dark Order, this one, they didn't sell it properly. So, you know, Mark, you mentioned what was the best solution to do this instead.
Yeah, we talked about this before we started recording. And, you know, we're not necessarily considering ourselves excellent bookers by any means, but I think AEW needs to be honest with themselves, and maybe it's almost, you know, like, cause the Dark Order and now with The Butcher and the Blade, and so LAX was a little bit of, you know, Santana and Ortiz were a little different, where they got a pop actually, but Dark Order and Butcher and the Blade, very unknown to mainstream wrestling fans. So when they debuted Dark Order, you know, and God love JR, he tries to get his commentating partners to elaborate more. But it's, you know, who are these guys? Butcher and the Blade. Who are these guys? Like, Jesus. Like, come on. Tell a story with me, guys.
But that's the problem, you right? Know, if they had done a vignette instead with, then you could tell a little bit of the story.
Oh, God,
but you got them going after Cody Rhodes, and you're like, who are these guys? And it's all like, well, I don't really have a whole lot of time to explain it, so I don't have time to go through the history. Oh,
and that's going to be very damaging, because, like, if anything, think of the really stellar vignettes you can have for several weeks leading up. You know, all of the, especially just the look of Butcher and the Blade. You know, and sir, was that Allie in a bunny leather suit with them that I saw?
I didn't notice Allie.
So, hold on. Let's just take a quick hot moment here. Okay, hold on, please. Butcher The blade.
Is that Leather Bunny Alley?
I guess it is. I didn't look that far. The video that I saw just had them coming through the
So Ali, of course, you know, a phenomenal.
Oh yeah,
wrestler.
It's Braxton's wife.
Braxton Sutter's wife. Yeah,
Pepper Parks.
Yeah,
his wife.
Yeah, so it definitely makes sense. But at first, when I saw it as a quick glance, I didn't know. Like, I didn't look at it long enough to see. But now that we're looking at it, it looks like Ali's with them. Hey, good on her. But yeah, I think the look and how good Butcher and the Blade is, they deserve, if anything, by having them join like this, you did a disservice to Butcher and the Blade. You know, they should have had like nice, like seven, eight weeks of just vignettes of them being together, either walking in a forest or just in a room, small little amounts of talks would have been beautiful. And then all of a sudden, eventually get everyone hype. And then have the commentators talk about, like, C4 wrestling, independent wrestling. This is what these guys are.
Yeah.
Like, they're coming. They're here. And it's like, that's what they could have done with Evil Uno and...
Stu Grayson.
You know what I mean? Like independent dream. Like, these guys have been all over the place, you know. And then they just kind of have them come up and go, who are these guys? Evil Uno and Stu Grayson. It's like, who? It's like, think of the build, the montages, the promo videos, the matches. On AEW's YouTube page, throw up some C4 matches with Butcher and the Blade and Dark Order. And then I know, obviously, I'm ranting now. You guys get our point. But that's where I think AEW needs to not just think, well, because AEW put it out there, it means it's gold and everyone's going to love it.
I mean, I'll tell you, I think it really strengthens their tag team division even more. Like, their tag team division is on point now.
Yeah, big.
It's big.
Big, but on point, for sure. You can't disagree. It's in a much better position than much other companies. But at the same time, how are you going to maintain it? You know, you got to find those stories in between. Because if you don't, you're just going to end up being what WWE ended up being. So.
Yeah. So, anything else you wanted to talk about? I know you talked a little bit about first appearance of
CM Punk. Yeah, no, once again, it's a little bit old news now, but a couple weeks ago, CM Punk made his debut broadcasting at WWE Backstage.
Yep.
You're distracting me. And he was pretty good. He was very open. He was very outspoken to the point of, you know, and especially in the first episode where Renee actually sat down with him and had an interview with him. And Punk was very open. I am not employed by the WWE. I work for Fox, you know, and Fox wanted him here. Some really good behind the scenes leading up to. One of the things I loved hearing was when CM Punk was very admitted of, like, I have butterflies, like, I'm nervous, I'm excited. And he's meshing well with Paige, he's meshing well with Renee Young, he's meshing well with Booker T. You know, they did last week they did Promo Class, and David Arquette was on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And David Arquette just, like, doing an on-the-fly promo with Booker T.
I was surprised.
It was really great. It was really, really great.
So how does this show compare to The Bump?
The Bump
is also on the network. Yes. And The Bump is kind of like Talking Smack.
So I would say this is... So The Bump is talking about wrestling. But WWE Backstage is criticizing wrestling.
Okay.
Specifically criticizing WWE.
Right, so that's
where CM Punk is on a mic going, Seth Rollins, you need to put Twitter down. Like, you need to stop. Like, okay. That's what Seth Rollins' problem is he can't put Twitter down. Put Twitter down. Like, and they're not afraid to kind of say, like, that sucked. Like, the whole, like, for example, they asked CM Punk what they thought about 2 weeks ago when King Corbin had the doll, the dog for Roman come down. It's like, beep, beep, beep. It's like that was dumb. Like, just dumb. Like, that was the dumbest crap I've seen in a long time.
I'm wondering how this works.
So, but this was the whole point of WWE Backstage. this was part of the contract, is you need to, and if anything, I like it because it goes to show, because regardless, yes, it's a Fox program, WWE, so it's produced and everything by Fox with WWE characters on it.
Oh, okay.
That's the main thing. So, but of course, WWE would not allow their talent on there unless they were okay with it. But I think WWE, my hopes are, is that they like it because you need to be able to make fun of yourself.
There's a fine line between making fun of yourself and trashing your own product to the point where people...
Sure, but you need to make... But what's great about this is that it's not like someone's watching Game of Thrones and then they're critiquing Game of Thrones. It's the wrestling business. So you need to be able to be critical about the business. So I think that's where it becomes a little easier. Is they're not just sitting here being, he sucks, he's dumb, the writer did this. It's just more like, this is what happened. That was really stupid. That was really, really stupid. Like, this Lana angle with, like, so dumb. Like, they're not afraid. Because if anything, do you not think WWE knows this Lana, Bobby, and Rusev angle is dumb?
Yeah, they're kind of too far into it.
But even then, they've cut things off in a snap of a finger whenever they want.
And she resigned for longer.
Yep. And of course, too, one really good thing that I heard last week on Corey Graves' After the Bell podcast had the Randy Orton. Great, great interview. Randy Orton just signed a new 5-year deal with WWE. Randy Orton is also going to have he's going to be an in-ring competitor, as well as he's going to help the talent backstage.
Oh, really?
With just kind of like them, their attitude, their characters. He talked about how people like, he's willing to help the people that are willing to put the work in. So, like, the Allies, the Ricochets, Shorty Gable, like, come and be like, hey, Randy, I'm my match is on. Like, could you watch me?
Like, okay. So, as a mentor. Yeah. Like, a proper mentor.
Yeah. And he's saying he's not just doing it to anyone. He's doing it to the people that truly want it. If he feels that you don't want it, he wants nothing to do with you. But Randy he's helping be a locker room leader. Because he's been there in the old school, and he's now there in a new day era, and Randy's very excited about this new opportunity.
Yeah.
He's like, I love WWE, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
And it's perfect. It's the perfect spot for him.
It is. Because
he can still carry, he can still do his job.
Yeah.
And he does it really well, and you see that. Not all the time. Sometimes he gets a little stagnant, but then he comes back, and you're like, oh, there's Randy.
Yep. He's the type of guy where no matter what you do, no matter how long it's been, you can put him back into the title picture at any given moment, and it fits. Randy Orton will probably... Randy Orton's in a class of his own.
Yeah.
Like, he's a very... Like, I don't know if you're ever going to have another Randy Orton, but not going to spoil it too much, but after Survivor Series, the first episode of the Broken Skull show, Stone Cold Steve Austin interviewed The Undertaker. Funny enough, he interviewed Mark Calloway. So they talked a lot about way back in the 80s, you know, when The Undertaker was first coming up, things that he did to kind of make ends meet, you know, a place to crash, who trained him, where did he go, his time coming in, his development and relationship with Vince McMahon while creating The Undertaker gimmick, his very first meeting with Vince McMahon, and just how he ripped his pants the night before, and just, it's a great episode. It's very open. Stone Cold asks very open questions. And it's not just like, yeah, I'm the dead man. Yeah, I'm this. And he doesn't avoid answering anything. It's very much like, how do you feel about the business? Why didn't you ever go to WCW? Were you ever offered? Why haven't you retired yet? Like, what is stopping you from going too long where you're damaging something? And he's very open about it all. You know, he's too stubborn for his own good. He will know when to go when he knows when to go.
Wow.
He
should know that he needs to go.
But who's to tell him?
He should tell himself.
But that's the problem.
I know.
You know,
I get it.
It's like me telling you, I don't know, stop watching the Steelers. And then you're like, I don't want to stop watching the Steelers. Or you put your phone down during podcasts. Jokes aside, it's great. Great episode.
Do they give an indication of how frequent it's going to be?
So apparently they have... Stone Cold was also on Corey Graves' podcast where they asked. So they have several of them taped and done.
Okay.
So there's some in the bank. if it does well, more will continue to come out. If it does well, more will continue to... Steve is very... He loves this, and he wants to do more, but it's all about how it does.
Okay.
But I love this. This was so much different than... It was a podcast, but it was real.
Okay.
It was real. And they talked about stories, like, way back in, like, the late 80s when The Undertaker and Stone... Like, they faced each other in a match, and, like, just outside of WWE completely. Like, it was great. It was two boys, two good friends... like good road buddies. Well, it was funny enough, even they talked about it, where like, I know you, we're friends, like, but we don't really know each other.
Yeah.
Like, you had your crew, I had my crew, you know, but there were so, it was, wasn't one of those things where you were like, I didn't learn anything new. You were like, holy crap. And it was Mark talking, like Mark Calloway talking. And it was Steve Austin talking, not about being a gimmick or whatever.
It
was
Steve Williams.
Steve Williams. But it was all about, it was just about the business and truthful about things. I've been a wrestling fan. I'm 34 years old. I've been watching wrestling since I was 4 years old. I'm very deep into wrestling knowledge. I learn things that I never even knew. So I would say if you're an enthusiast that loves the knowledge and to see that back end stuff, because you don't get a lot of Undertaker interviews. It doesn't happen a lot.
That's true.
So it's definitely a rare occurrence. That was well done.
Okay.
But yeah, but outside of that, love you, Mauro Ranallo. Hopefully everything's okay, and you come back to Twitter soon, and you come back to NXT very soon. And if you're a UFC fan, it was just announced that Conor McGregor will be fighting Cowboy Donald Cerrone January 18th.
Woo! All right. So I think that ends it for this week.
That does.
We will be back next week. We will give a review of C4's Combat Shock and kind of just talk about what's going on, because we have... SmackDown coming up tomorrow night.
That's right.
We'll see what happens with the After Survivor Series, where we see with Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns, the whole nine.
Yeah, so we'll have two Raws and a SmackDown in between. Plus,
that's right.
Of course, we could recap the C4 show from tomorrow.
Yeah.
And yeah, so definitely some good easygoing wrestling content, but content nonetheless.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for joining. Once again, my name is Kyle.
And my name is Mark.
And you are listening to the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show.
Have a good one.
Have yourselves a good night.
Merry Christmas.
Or day, depending on when you listen to it.